Welcome to another edition of What the Fuck Happenings. Okay, maybe reflections. Reactions happening here. In me. Yes, this person. So that's really all we do is just react constantly. And we call them actions, but they're really just always reactions based on preconditioned reflexes. What kind of camel we have and what kind of straws we've put on its back and what kind of things, you know, irritate versus please us and all of that crap. And most of that is decided, well, all of it, by circumstances. And one can argue, though, that out of all of that can glean something called, an understanding that's challenged or tested through interactions in terms of doing something called logic, and that this logic stuff would be based on certain facts that are generally understood, like there's a difference between a round thing and a square thing, they're not the same thing, difference between a rock and a human. We add up those kind of facts and can create something that is more isn't as controlled by the environment, let's just say. The ingredients are, but the mixing is controlled by something called logic. If you have enough of the right ingredients, it's almost like language in the sense that you have to have enough words to be able to use it effectively. With logic, you sort of have to have enough facts for it to be of any use. If you're stuck 2,000 years ago, you don't have a lot of capacity, I guess, to see the truth. And so you're stuck with a bunch of phenomenon that you can't explain. And you might, think God is a reasonable answer. 2,000 years later, you think so, you're an idiot. I mean, you haven't gotten anything out of your existence value in the sense that you don't have enough rational facts. You don't have enough real ones. To do anything logical or to progressively stack the facts in the right order and create a fact pyramid sensible, accurate, catches the truth in its shape or in its form. And so I would argue there's a truth about value. Value isn't some just make it up crap. There's facts and they all point in a certain direction. So just as evolution is a truth that, the tortoise evolved as we did from, a kind of a brutal pool of crud, that the truth evolves, and it has its, it has definite practical structure that it has to meet. It's obligated to follow or obey certain laws and all of this kind of stuff to be accurate. Accuracy is a real thing, I guess is all I'm saying. There's a real truth. So there's only one right answer to a value question, I would argue. Some of them are just hard to calculate. If I give everybody a banana split, or I give everybody chocolate mousse cake. Which one is a better world? The world where everybody had a banana split, or everybody had chocolate mousse cake, or something. There's probably a truth. It's probably something to do with how many people are allergic to bananas, or something. Who knows? But there's an outcome, and there's a fact that you could glean out of the outcome saying, yes, which one would be a better idea? Which one worked better? Which one created more good and caused less bad and all of that? And those are real equations, and they're there for us to attempt to do something with them. All right, so anyway, I got a whole page of notes attempting to sum up all this crap, and I just didn't get it done. So it's just a bunch of stuff. But, it's all the stuff. I think it's all on this page. It just, it's just not in a pyramid. The ingredients are all here for us to have a conversation and to point out how it's silly to be nihilist or to pretend there's no value distinction between a sentient organism having a nail in its eye and or some grass on its nose. That these are very different outcomes or events or happenings, and one of them is decidedly and intrinsically negative compared to the other as a reality. One is worth pressing the "do go ahead and do that" button, and the other one, there's no way you press the button. There's no theory that can defend pressing the button because it's decidedly not a good button. So this is an argument we really shouldn't have to have with other feeling beings, that you'd have to have an argument about the fact that there's things that shouldn't happen that are bad and they should be avoided or prevented, and, this is a reality. So there's this thing called value where we're making these trade-offs where we will, in the world, have to deal with this now. So that's a second argument. So the first argument is we know there's value. All right, now we can have some argument about, well, we really can't. It won't be really an argument. It'll just be me telling you how stupid you are to think otherwise. But anyway, value is obviously in the experience. Things experiencing are producing value. By being conscious and capable of feeling good and feeling bad, you make value. And nothing else has intrinsic value. Everything else is just a circumstantial or a conditional value where it only has value because it pleases you or doesn't please you, and that's it. There's no other way to say it has any value. It's only like this battery or something. It doesn't produce any intrinsic value. It only has value, there's a better word for that, as an extension of the fact that it will affect me positively or negatively, in terms of make me feel something, cause me harm or not. And the argument that there's value is should be a simple enough one. The argument that fundamentally the value is just derived by having the things that make value make positive value rather than negative value, feel good rather than feel bad, and that you have to measure, the complication is we have to measure how much good we're getting for how much bad, how much we're spending to have the good. And that's essential to the argument, essentially, and that just has to do with understanding that the world, it's not a single-player game, so that's a, a fact, one of those little statements you have to make. The game of life is not a single-player game, and most especially for an intelligent organism. Now, the dumb little organisms, they can't tell. It's not a single-player game, but they can't know that because they can't know this bigger picture that all these other things are alive and that they're going to affect them by pooing in the water or doing whatever they're doing. They have no way of knowing that they're imposing. But we, as intelligent organisms, can know we're imposing. We can see the imposition. We can model the system and see that somebody else steps in my poo and slips and falls and, has to spend a half an hour cleaning me off of their shoe, and then, where they could have been doing something productive and their whole life is ruined, blah, blah, blah. So we can see all of that crap. We can see the expenses and the prices paid for our actions that aren't paid by us personally. So we can know that. It's not a single-player game. It just isn't. I mean, it would be really great if we didn't have to have any of these conversations, because everything you do to yourself. And you can say, I don't want any advice, and I don't want to know any better, and I don't want to be considerate of my feelings. All of that. That'd be really great if that was the real world, but it's not. The real world is everything you do or don't do will have an impact on the destiny of everything on the planet. Essentially, is at jeopardy based on what you do, theoretically. There's a real chance it could matter to everyone, to everything. It could be put in a lesser state because of something you did or didn't do. So that at least makes another thing valuable that wouldn't be valuable if it wasn't for that fact. And so it makes this idea of being able to understand these implications, these consequences, and it becomes essential as a valuable thing, this idea of taking it seriously, the idea of giving it thought, giving it attention, because now you know there's more, more is dependent than just what you get out of it, whether it makes your brain happy or not. It's also this idea of what did it do to all the other brains. And so now we have this obligation to value time spent even just thinking about consequences, being careful. So now careful, caution becomes an important word because, again, it's not just you that's at risk. And if you want to say, I don't care about risk, I'm interested in risk, gimme, 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 or whatever the thing would be, I could say that's sort of really illogical and only retards would behave that way, so I could still find a justification to say you're too stupid to exist or something and, press the cancel that button. Because even if you were a single-player game, it would be a pretty silly game you're playing where let's not care about the outcome. Outcomes are important. You're, again, creating something. The future is something, this big. The present is this big. It's just logical to pay attention to the bigger thing, the thing that has... that will be dependent, will be sitting in the rowboat a lot longer. I mean, if the boat only has to float for 5 minutes, then okay, who cares? But the idea is this boat has to last, that its durability will be important, and the durability of the value of your decisions, the, short run versus long run. This is, again, just a basic logical statement. You really shouldn't have to argue with people about the value of, a car engine that lasts more than 15 minutes, 15 days. Obviously that wouldn't be very practical or useful, but you need one that can do a lot better than that. And the same is true for your decisions. They have to have value that goes further than right now, this moment. Fix now, break tomorrow. That's not logical. In most cases, that will be the road to failure. And that's something everybody should be able to agree on, that just got to be cautious because that's what's at risk, is that you, compromise the future to expedite the present, and got to avoid doing stupid things like that. All right, so really, just the two main words here are value and how it's going to be imposed. I mean, so value theory is how you decide how you're going to impose values, your values. And the simple argument is if you're completely unqualified and that you haven't given it any thought and you're, too busy, doing to think about doing, then again, you're sort of disqualified. You should disqualify yourself as anybody who should have even an opinion or saying anything because you're so incompetent because you haven't even bothered to spend any time thinking about the fact that it's these are real connections between the present and the future, and what you do now will affect the future, and that it's life isn't simple. That the blueprint of the right answer to get to it sometimes is complicated. There's, just everything isn't obvious. It takes a bit of thought to figure out what the right answer is. As I've used the example, is sort of like feeding the hungry people. It's not really the right answer, just isn't. Okay, if they're going to create more hungry people tomorrow that you can't afford to feed. you always have to be mindful of these traps where the right answer seems right there in front of you, but it's really not the right answer because you have to do this thinking thing. You have to understand the nuances of the traps that exist in life, and you know, it takes work. And there's a bunch of people who don't want to do any of that work. They just want to negate having to take any responsibility for the fact that they live in a multiplayer game. And so they become nihilistic in the superficial sense. They don't even do their nihilism in any kind of honest way. They just do it in this completely dishonest way where they say, well, I'll take care of me. The world has to take care of itself. As if they've somehow now eliminated the obligation by pretending they're not influencing anything. You know, when, no, you can't get away from it. What you say or don't say, every bit of it matters. And there's lots of ways to, you know, model it and understand your role could be all kinds of roles. You can have all kinds of effects. And making you, turning yourself into something that's just motivated by this tiny part of the model, what's in it for me, is not going to in any way give you any insight into all the ways you will affect the world, or neglect the world, or neglect your responsibilities not to trespass on the world, the rest of the world, the rest of the machinery that's in motion. Just by breathing, you're changing, yeah, the atmosphere everything else has to live in, kind of obviously, so I shouldn't have to say it. So anyway, I guess I should have mentioned there was, you know, it's part of my reaction is what I've seen this week. So there was a lot of anti-natalist stuff. The social experimentalist guy did he had a conversation with the troll, which is weird, Luke, Logan, something, Blake, you know, which is kind of, I found a little bit ironic just because he kind of dumped on me for responding to the other troll, Superior Dance, and yet he's going to play with the trolls instead, so that was a little bit strange. Anyway, and then the podcast thing. 2 hours of nice, and you know, at least the audio was good, and but it was just all jargon. I mean, it was 2 hours of jargon, you know, and so it's all right. I mean, it's on the right subject, but it's just not concise enough. Not that this video will be either, in the sense that I'm drafting the notes, get to the more concise argument. It's just piling up the theory, you know, piling up the, you know, just the blocks. These are the blocks, and you just got to show how they're ordered. And so I'm just trying to start with this premise that there is this thing at risk, the welfare of all sentient beings in the universe. And the fact is you're influencing it, whether you like it or not. That's kind of a heavy responsibility that requires you to have some understanding of the nature of what an outcome is and what a worthwhile outcome is, how much you should pay for. It's like going to the store. You have an understanding of what things are worth. So you have to have some understanding of what's worth something here. You know, you don't pay cancer for a stick of bubble gum. You know, you don't make insane exchanges. You don't cause one person extreme harm for frivolous and trivial goods for another person to experience. It's idiotic and stupid and crazy and insane. It's all of those things. Alright, so yeah, so the basic first truth is that there's something at risk. There is some real thing called value. It's measured by the outcome, and the ultimate outcome is the, you know, what was the whole story when you write the whole book from start to finish, and that story, I would already argue that a rational person could understand that that story is always going to be a bad book. The book of life is not going to be a good story because of what's already been paid. It's been so horrendous. Hundreds of millions of years of organisms, you know, being pretty much serial killed, you know, just a Freddy's nightmare played out over and over and over. It's just no, can't make anything out of that ingredient. That poison is so powerful that no matter what ingredients we pile in the cake now, it's just too late. You're never going to make something good out of, because it's already so poisoned. So another concept, you know, worth noting is that there's a context to this conversation, and that is what's, what did life come from, and, you know, what is it, what's the mechanism, you know, what's it, what's its function without intelligent human around, what's its function, and its function's pretty dismal. So that just provokes another little reaction, just because, you know, these optimistic, biased, you know, woo thinkers are all over the place, you know. So I heard a physicist the other day, and he's doing a live room, and he says something about aliens, you know, and why they're not, we haven't seen them, but he's got this whole attitude, again, like this generic attitude that it must happen all through the universe. And it's just such a narrow view, because, you know, for you to believe that it happens all through the universe, intelligence anyway, then you have to explain why it didn't happen here on Earth, in a sense. Because without the invention of the neuron, if you take away all the organisms that have neurons, and neurons was only a one-time event, there was no other mechanism invented by nature to take care of this thinking thing and feeling thing and all of this mush, didn't happen anywhere else. There's no second version of it. So here on a planet covered with biological life, you know, it doesn't make any logical sense to say it automatically happens, because it only happened once. Just once. You take away that one event, the first neuron, what's the most intelligent life on Earth? I mean, it's a microbe. I mean, there won't be anything called intelligent in the sense that there won't be any brain, there won't be any central processor, there won't be any of that. And so you have to believe that, what, it automatically happens in space all the time, even though it doesn't even happen all the time on Earth. Not one single competing version of that event. Well, anyway, see, that's what I mean by you have to do this thinking thing. You have to think about things, because nothing's, it's not just, oh, there's a billion stars, there must be a billion other living things. It's not that simple. And people want to make it simple. They want to believe it's simple, because they're simple-minded and they're too stupid for the conversation, frankly. So in some ways, all the words are wasted, because they'll never, most people just won't admit they're terribly underqualified to be interacting in a multiplayer game. They're so blind and dumb in terms of the, you know, they can't figure out where to step at all, except they can see what's good for them. But they barely even do that with any reasoning, right? They buy lottery tickets, they squander their money on, you know, restaurants or some other, you know, I mean, the silly ways they piss away their fortunes and piss away their health and piss away all kinds of things. I mean, I'm guilty of some of that. You know, just overtly demonstrating profound incompetence in even managing their one little tiny life, let alone managing their influence on the universe. All right. I'll take a break, I believe, and to be back to try to get to all of this crap. Alright, do a little bit on the asymmetry. The fact that we don't really grieve for the absent Martians not having a good time on Mars. Like, we don't sit here and go, oh, how horrible it is that they're not square dancing or watching the football, the big football game. Or even, you know, doing the nasty bit. You know, and having their little moments. We don't grieve much. We don't spend any time going, oh, gee, isn't that just horrible? I mean, I can't even fake any, like, oh, I so miss that. Oh, it's so struck me. It's such a horror. The planet doesn't have dancing Martians on it. No, doesn't bother me at all. But if the planet was populated with a bunch of Martians who were in pain, squirming, you know, as the acid of the atmosphere or something changes, and they're all in horrible pain and, you know, burdened and miserable, and, you know, every minute of their existence is this tedious struggle to find a little bit of comfort, like every little bit of their skin is stinging and they're just horribly, horribly blighted, that would affect me. That would be something that haunted me as an image, you know, like some half-run-over cat on the side of the street or something. It would just sit there for the rest of my life just saying, this is not acceptable, this is horrible. So there's this huge asymmetry between a missed good, whatever, you know, a good that's not like curing cancer, just a good like whatever, happy square dancing, and the negative thing. The value is way out of proportion in terms of, you can miss lots of goods and it can't mean much, but you just have to impose a few bads and it means a lot. The value weight is not proportional. And this sort of goes to the argument that you can really just undo you can know the asymmetry for what it is, and realizing that, yes, most of the goods aren't goods. Almost every single one of them can be understood as a kind of bad condition fixed. And so, as I put it, you can understand reward and punishment as a mechanism, and you can understand the carrot and the whip, but in a sense they're the same thing. The carrot only has value because of hunger, a negative condition that motivates, you know, satisfaction. And the whip is clearly this negative condition that you can eliminate, and that if you really want to manipulate something, you manipulate it by whipping it and then rewarding it with not being whipped anymore. And that's what most of our life is trying to evade the whip, trying to evade the bad stuff, the doom and the gloom and the horror and the feelings, the burdens, the damage. So we're not really chasing anything, honestly. We're just running from the bad. And one of the bad things is this idea of being dead. The idea of being dead is kind of obnoxious to us because we're alive and we wish to stay in our comfortable living state, so to speak, our the state for which we, the one we know, and we know as a state. And death often comes with this thing called dying, which isn't at all look like fun at all. It's, you know, you wouldn't sit there and say, it makes sense, Disneyland doesn't say enough, let's call it dying. You know that dying's not a theme park, okay? It's not a place that's going to give you any happy, tingly bits of fun. It requires the destruction of your structure, and that destruction will no doubt have pain associated with it, and perhaps intractably horrid amounts of it. And so nothing, hard to make it into something pleasant to think about. But again, those are just tricks of perspective. And that if you have the right perspective, you understand that dying isn't, or being dead isn't any different than being asleep. And certainly that doesn't bother me much. So I don't dream anymore. Is that what it comes down to? Well, I wouldn't know the difference anyway, would I? I mean, go to sleep, I know I dream, but I know I don't dream the whole time. So I must be spending some portion of that time I'm asleep not doing anything. Or I don't remember, so. But same difference in this circumstance. But it's completely benign as a thing. I mean, there's nothing to fear here, in recognizing, I'm looking over there, microphone, doesn't have a camera in it, anyway, sorry about that, I don't know if it really matters though, anyway, cold here, sorry, so this is just a little bit of thought, you know, a little bit of conversation people can have, they can understand that their perspective is warped and bent by this perception of their own, the vulnerability of their meaning and the value of their existence is somehow compromised by some sense that it's not going to be reoccurring, or you know, that it is actually just a sort of a waste of time. You know, that all of this chasing is just because you have an empty stomach and you're chasing an illusion of a full stomach, and you never really get a full stomach. You just get hungry again and go through this process over and over of just chasing a carrot. And, you know, there's all kinds of ways to understand what life is as being rather futile and pointless as a device, that we're not some kind of wonderful, magical, what's the right word to say, pinball machine or soda machine or something. We don't produce anything. We just consume electricity, okay, and grind gears into nubs and create some heat. And you could argue that that's sort of the byproduct, that pain is like a heat. And we're just wasting consciousness, struggling to do it badly because we can't maximize its function, because it is sort of dependent on the ouch. I mean, if you understand that theoretically life might not have come in two flavors, you know, the first sensation might not have been pleasure and pain. The first sensation might have just been the ouch. Ow, that hurt. And now you have a mechanism that you can take away, and that's good. And you sort of see that in our real world, that most of the goods, the really good goods, are really just relieving some sort of negative condition, loneliness or fear or terror. Certainly the pain thing is so obvious, evading negatives of disability and dysfunction and pain. Clearly a good not to have the pain, to avoid it, to evade it. That's so we're in the process of doing that in our lives, and most of the time when we're doing that, people want this immunity from having to consider the implications. Now, they know that those things are important, that they're not supposed to throw their garbage out the window of their car because they know that makes a mess that somebody else has to deal with. You know, they can know these basic things, that they can't always have what they want, but they want to limit their responsibility to those equations as much as they possibly can, and they want to clearly state that somehow if something bad's happening to somebody else, they can just blame them for not avoiding the garbage I threw out the window. Like, I can throw it out my window and it's their fault for being right behind me and having it hit their windshield or something. You know, somehow that's their fault. That kind of excuse making and rationalizations for why they don't have to take full responsibility for all of it. And once you say that, once you say almost that there's almost any level of responsibility you have to take for your existence, you can already know you're in big trouble. But you can know there's no way I'm able to do all that. I can't measure all of my reactions. And so in existence, even if I was a very thoughtful, careful, decent person, I still couldn't justify my existence or creating that person, because he's still going to be incompetent to the game he's playing. The game is more complicated than he can play. He can't play a complex enough game. He can't play a precise enough game to ever create implications that are going to be maximized in performance. He's never going to get the best out of it, just as the, you know. So originally I had argued that the asymmetry argument was essentially a zero-sum argument, that you can't. Perfection is never being whipped. And essentially you can never get to that condition. You can never get to the unwhipped condition. And so you're always a loser in some sense. Yes, you can mitigate how many whips you get hit by. You can reduce the number to like 30 or something, you know, some I got through life without all this tragedy because I was careful and I was lucky and blah, blah, blah. And you could make the argument I got whipped less, so therefore I'm better because I didn't endure 600 whips or 6 million whips. But it really, you're still a loser. You're still 30 whips down from the zero, you know, from just being neutral, for being irrelevant, and not a negative. So anyway, so the point is you can make this rational argument that the whole system is based on the invention of the negative, and that all we ever do is attempt to dig back to the surface. We're forced to be mole men, and you know, can spend all of our industry, but we'll never fly. You know, we'll never get above the surface, and we'll at best get back to the surface. We're in a dungeon, and the best we can do is try to climb our way out, but we're not going anywhere above the surface. The surface zero, just getting back to even, so to speak, unencumbered. Not negative. All right. So again, it's pretty simple. I mean, I think to establish the fact that the value exists in this pain and suffering thing. There's clearly a disproportion in the function of any idea of good that is separate from fixing a bad. So you're really just exchanging, you know, levels of bad. How much bad? How much are we going to waste? So, you know, not that we're going to gain anything. There's nothing to gain here. There's only things to lose. And that's really the asymmetry, is the concept of up is broken by the fact that we're so far down in terms of how we're structured or built. And so the next, like I said, the other key word is this idea that you have to understand your life isn't about you. When you say, make more, you're not just sentencing yourself to the jeopardy, you're sentencing everything that will ever exist in the future to the jeopardy. The jeopardy isn't yours to impose unless you have some reasoning that can undo the other arguments, the statements that, well, what if you're wrong in your happy theory, that everything balances out, that everything's just fine, that dying's great? What if you're wrong? Then the consequence is that you're just a horrible, awful, evil bastard. You know, that, you know, you imposed torture. And did you do it responsibly or irresponsibly? Did you do it knowing what you were doing? Did you do it caring whether or not you were doing that? Did you take into consideration this is not a risk-free thing, that this thing is complicated, that this might take a little bit of thought for you to figure out whether you're making the right move here, whether you're really making a wise purchase when you're purchasing something for somebody else? I guess that's the, you know, the simplest form of that statement is we all know that when we're going out to buy something for somebody else that we actually care about, that we're even more cautious than when we're doing it for ourselves. That we don't want to look like, we're reckless and stupid. Oh, we got a bad deal. Oh, we, you know. No, we always try to make it get the best we can for somebody else. We understand the responsibility to do our best. And so maybe you don't care about doing the best for yourself. That's okay. But when you do that logically and impose that kind of judgment on the rest of the world, where you say, I'm going to endorse people recklessly having kids or thoughtlessly having kids, you're doing the same thing as being a really bad friend, where, you know, you pay less attention than you would to yourself. And again, that's sort of the argument, because most of these people who are arguing in defense of these risks aren't the ones who are at jeopardy of pulling the ticket. They're so focused on what's relevant to them personally, you know, like somehow personal value is the only value. And they've eliminated all these other possibilities. I mean, they can't be 6 years old and get cancer now, right? They're immune from being a 6 year old who gets cancer. So all of a sudden they can negate, you know, that risk, to the rest of the world. They might be imposing it on the next kid who's going to be 6 years old and get cancer. They're pretty much saying, I'm not going to be that kid. Now, if you have any kind of, you know, if you can think a little bit deeper than the thin film on Logan Blake's sunglasses, you know, you're going to realize that those consciousnesses are just as real and just as valuable as yours, and those negative experiences are just like you experiencing them. And so I'm just saying, if we could really make this game real, if we could make your decisions and actually impose them on you, if there was some real risk that when you're playing this game of risk, that all of these negatives that can happen that you see in the real world that have real probabilistic inevitabilities over time, especially the permutation of long time, that these things will be experienced. And then if the real risk is that you're going to pull that straw, I don't know if you wouldn't be picking those straws. You'd be like, no, I want a better game than this. All right, there's way too many short straws in this bucket. I mean, I can understand that I got, you know, I'm entering a lottery essentially into a bunch of negatives. You know, these straws aren't like 999 million long straws and only a couple of little tiny bad straws. But even that, to a rational person, in my opinion, is still going to be, why would I do that? So I can put Martians on Mars? I mean, it's not going to be me. It's not going to be somebody I really care to have on Earth or in space. There's nothing essential about the process that it must go on. I can make organisms extinct all over the Earth, and you're not going to miss them. You know, don't pretend you really do, or that it really grieves you or really hurts you in some substantial way, because it really doesn't. And if you really thought about what the state is for most of the things you're making extinct, what you're eliminating is all of this carnage that happens. For this one turtle, thousands of turtles have to die in their youth. Thousands of them. To make one big one. You'd say what a brilliant scheme. Let's keep that up. Let's just keep doing that over and over and over again. And that we see that in the human condition. You know, nobody's testifying from the grave, you know, so we don't hear the dead people saying, hey, watch out, don't do that. Be awful careful because it sure didn't work for me. You know, all the 18-year-olds on the dead, you know, on the battlefields, none of them have any voices. To give you some caution about maybe you're paying a little too much for this, you know, especially like in the old battlefields where it could take you 6 weeks or 6 months to finally be killed. You just end up dying for that long. I'm sure their testimony would be, oh, can't you do better than this? This isn't nearly good enough. Okay, I don't want to do this again. So if that's the game, I get to do this over again, I'm not playing. And you're basically saying, no, fuck you. You're not allowed to not play. I'm going to force it on you. My values are the right values. I should impose them on you. Because I can defend them. Because Jesus told me so. And that's pretty much all that really is, right? It's just old holdover from religion that we're on some mission to do something brilliant for God. You know, we're all dancing for God. And people think that's what they're really doing. They're playing this stupid competitive game over and over again, making all these losers, making all this mediocrity for the spectacle, just for the God audience. Because that's all that's in the audience applauding would have to be some sadistically lunatic God. Nobody rational could sit there and say, yeah, let's keep doing that play. You know, stab your neighbor, you know. Besides, look, again, so if you made the game real, if I could really impose this on the Logan Blakes where they actually have to put their hand into the thing and they know that more than half of the straws they're going to pull are a life they wouldn't want to live. They wouldn't want to be the average person. You know, they're just so full of shit. They'd want to be the exceptional one, the one gets lucky, the one that has it better. They don't want to be the average. They don't want to, and they certainly don't want to be the losers, the hard losers. They wouldn't like those straws being in there at all. And they just pretend because they're protected. They're not really playing the game. Okay, it will be somebody else. The rational person understands it doesn't matter if it's somebody else. Changing their superficial name and changing the color of their eyes and changing a few of their understandings, you know, what exactly they understand or how they feel, you know, what exactly tickles them. Those are such irrelevant changes, you know. They're all soda machines, and you're sentencing them to these horrible outcomes merely out of some glib notion that this is a play worth playing, that having these stupid machines beat the shit out of each other and then do a special little dance is somehow worth the carnage. It's just really stupid. I mean, profoundly undefendable as a way of understanding value and a way of even defending some sort of argument. Again, who do you think needs this besides you? I mean, besides you thinking there needs to be Martians, what is the rational argument that there needs to be Martians? There's no rational argument. There's no way to defend putting them there. They really can't accomplish anything but to waste their time being addicted to something, chasing a carrot of some kind. They have to be made hungry. What are you going to make them hungry for? What? It's not a rationally defendable experiment. It's just like saying, you know, you're a scientist and you have a hammer and you have a bucket of mice and you say, I'm going to do the hammer the mice experiment. What are you going to learn? How mushy mice can get. Well, you know, there's nothing going to be accomplished by it. You're just going to brutalize a bunch of sentient organisms and turn them into shit for no good reason. And that's all they have as a defense. Is I wish to impose my values on you. My values are superior. My logic is superior. Life is good. Life is worth having. It's doing something totally, totally productive. And yet you can't articulate a single element of this productive. What exactly, what productivity is being missed on Pluto? What? You really think, you know, stars aren't productive until they have little beings living on them? Every little surface in the universe should be littered with little beings who think they're special? Because that's innately productive, to have little stupid beings thinking they're special? While they're watching freaking cartoons, you know, living vicariously through silly little entertaining movies and shit. You know, what are you doing that's worthy of torture? I mean, that really should be the, you know, the argument. So anyway, there's lots of other nuances, and so I'll look at over my notes and see if there's any other trigger words that are worthy of saying something about. But again, it's just the arguments, you know, the fact that you don't grieve for the absent Martians, it's just a powerful argument. Think about it. It's a powerful argument that you're just living in a delusion of grandeur. You think it's important that people are on Earth. You don't think it for some good reason. You think it for silly reasons. I'll be back. Yeah, I should be back. Better check. Yeah, I did. All right. So yeah, the sort of the important thing to say is the pro-lifers are basically saying that my need for safety is trumped by their need for more. They want more, and they think they're justified in saying their right to more is more important than my right to less, my right not to be subjected to any more. I don't want any more. I've had more than enough. So it's like sort of, you could argue, a food kind of analogy. Somebody's full, and they're saying, I'm going to shove more food in your mouth because I want to eat more. So they can only eat by shoving food in your mouth. And it's okay with them. They'll accept that as a rational imposition because they think they're having more is so valuable. And the full people are saying, no, pain is bad. I don't want any more of it. I'm done. I've had my fill of whatever this game is. I've played it enough. And I don't see any real value in your having more. I don't think you need to keep feeding anything. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't accomplish anything. It isn't worth anything. It has no intrinsic value in and of itself. It produces nothing except the risk of making me suffer more. Better way to say that is something, you know, it's they're valuing this trivial gluttony over prevention of suffering. But anyway, the fact is one of these decisions has to win. I mean, either there's no more or there's no more suffering. But they can't both win. And they're saying they should win because they've so demonstrated how it's worth it. And I would argue that they haven't demonstrated any worth or value. Again, I can just point to the vacant planets and point out how if it were true that it was such a horror that there isn't more on those planets, why is more worth it? You know, they don't grieve for all the humans that could have been if we were more careful in how we allocated resources on Earth. We could have billions of more people. They don't grieve for those billions lost to their trivial gluttony again. I mean, trivial gluttony. You know, they wouldn't have to give up very much to have another billion people. Cost pennies, you know, to make one of these living things. So there's no logic in the argument, and they're just arrogant and aggressive, and you know, it's probably a better word for that kind of tyranny. They're tyrants. And all that will be gained for their efforts is the creation of just completely unnecessary suffering. And so the rational among us who sit here and say, why would I risk anything for this, for nothing? You know, for the trivial outcome of having Martians, why would I risk being born one of the loser Martians? You know, why would I be interested in playing? What's my interest in reaching in and pulling straws? Because even the winning straw is a loser. I mean, the process. Do people really think I want to live somebody else's life? Do they really sit there in their world and say, gee, their life is really great. I want to be him, as him. You know, you can't be somebody else. You have to be them. You have to actually humiliate yourself and do all these other things for your millions of dollars. You know, to have all your power, you have to have all their liabilities, all the liabilities of the bad decisions they've made in their life, the people they've screwed over, all of that. I'm not a buyer, clearly. And I'm certainly not a buyer in the sense I'm, you know, I would be apprehensive about sticking my hand in if you took the bottom half and you took them right out of the hat. You took all the worst, 50% of the worst straws out of the hat. I'm still not buying. You know. So again, but the bottom line is it's just kind of defending the fact that the imposition, that the decision is there for discussion and to be made, whether it's sensible to impose risk, or and whether any imposition is legitimate when it's not being imposed on yourself. When you're doing something for somebody else, are you allowed to tell them it's worth it? Okay, that the downside, getting the short straw, it was worth it. I bought you the present of pick a straw, and I know it's worth it. Okay, can you really impose that? Or should they be allowed to say, I don't want your gift, thank you? Who should have the veto? The person you're suggesting here, pick from my magic bucket, or the person who has to actually pick. I'd argue the people siding on the side of safety are the ones who should have the veto. The person you're tying to the trunk, into the trunk, that person should have the veto. The person you're, the dog you're tying to the back of the car should have the veto. So that's probably enough. It's a general statement. And I'll try to figure out a way to make it a more precise beam of light for the purpose of persuading the glib and the ignorant and the arrogant and the obnoxious and the stupidly deluded. But that's a long road, the stupidly deluded, because there's so many people have these fantastically wishy-washy and mushy views of what goes on planet Earth. And what they think the better future will be and all this other mush, you know, how they would construct this little perfect world. Just even thinking about how, I guess that's part of what television does to brains, is it cleans up so much of it, right? I mean, nobody goes to the bathroom on TV. Nobody does. You know, lots of things don't happen on TV. You know, reality doesn't happen. So they have a very fake and phony notion of how charming it can be. Even this picture, it's a very nice picture. You know, I mean, aesthetically, it's kind of a happy retard kind of picture. It gives you this sense that everything's okay. Okay, but it's a lie. It's a picture. Okay? I mean, it has symmetry and color and texture and has lots of things that are interesting. But what's really happening is not interesting. Thousands of dead tortoises for the one tortoise. That's not interesting. That's tragic. And the life it lives. You know, for every piece of crud and dirt, there's a story. Drought and birds and different things attacking him, parasites, all kinds of leeches, all kinds of difficulties to get to where he's gotten. It's not some free ride. It's not some little happy, you know, the bad water and all kinds of things he has to endure, to still be walking. Way too expensive. So, till the next time, and such. Yeah. Sorry about the, noise and such, but yeah. Do better in the future. Try. Always trying. Just fail a lot more than I should. I wish to do better. There, that's as good as I can do. I do wish to do better.